back to Videorama, your number one superstore, including Laserdiscs now, where we take your request for On a Topic and give you our recommendations. We received a request earlier this month from a dying, decrepit woman who is obviously suffering from dementia and asked for a horror movie directed by a woman with no nudity.
Are you okay with
that? I'm doing just fine with Dianetics, thank you.
Oh, okay.
My name is Linda, but you can, as always, call me the Cheese.
I'm Adrian, and just don't call me late for dinner.
And I'm Donnie, but because of our guest and their wonderful movie, you can call me Remy, short for Remington. I'd tell you what I'd do, but I'd have to kill you.
And yes, we do have a special guest this month. Yay!
Hello, new customer.
Welcome. I'm Becky.
Hi, Becky.
And I like to party. That was a Hot Rod reference.
So. Yeah.
But now I need all of you to go around and say you also like to party.
Oh, we have a shirt with a tuxedo on it because we like to party. But we like to be
kids
formal.
Look like they like to have a lot of fun.
Becky Sayers is our special guest today. She's an awesome storyteller, director, writer, overall awesome person.
We call them filmmakers now.
Auteur.
No.
Yep,
don't call me on tour.
Truffaut, Becky Sayers.
You heard it here. So I'm going with that. And you could check out her work. Actually, The Last Buck Hunt is available still on Amazon, right?
Yep, that's correct. Yeah,
that was your second feature, right?
Yes. Yes, my first feature is not really available anywhere. Probably for the better, I would say.
You're so modest.
Yeah.
The first film was something I shot in between summer break of my sophomore and junior year of college, because we had access to all this film equipment. We're like, let's just go make something.
That's what I always say.
And that's what we did.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think Adrian took some liberties with the college camera equipment.
What are you trying to imply?
Like, I remember the Art Institute taking their freaking $10,000 and $30,000 lenses because you only had to pay like 10% rental fee, and like, I will take this to take photographs. Like for school work.
Oh, whatever. That's how Phantasm got made. It's fine.
Exactly.
Is that what you call dick pics these days?
It's about lighting and composition, okay? It's appreciated.
Whatever.
Just making a commentary on socialism in today's society.
You know,
we don't say no dick pics in this man.
You try mimicking silhouette low-key lighting with a dick pic, okay?
Wait, someone isn't this out there the no nudity episode scene?
Yeah. This is one of the no nudity episodes.
Off to the wrong start.
That's what Mrs. Ellison on the answering machine asked for. She specifically said no nudity.
And
she didn't
obviously
say no lewd language,
it.
Though.
We're letting her down.
Let's take her glasses off. It'll be fine.
Mrs. Ellison might not appreciate that we're doing a movie with a lot of fuck words, but whatever. She didn't say that specifically.
Yeah.
And unfortunately for her, she called on her cell phone, and we have caller ID, and Donnie's been sending her pictures already for his schoolwork.
You need to give me back my cell phone already, and I'll kill these other guys in front of you. Just give me the phone. Just give to me that phone, child.
You have the phone. Just give me the tiger. That's all I want.
Yes, so our awesome guest this month actually has... I should mention, you are the first special guest of Videorama. So thank you so much.
What an honor.
Now you have all this pressure.
Yeah.
Setting the bar.
Adrian, you have a tiger.
And she ain't afraid of nothing.
She'll stick you with a knife, man.
Yeah. She'll cut you up so bad.
Yeah, so Becky had has a recommendation.
Yes, I do. Tigers Are Not Afraid, which it took me a bit to think about a film that met your criteria, because the first ones that came to mind all had nudity in them. Even though there was small, like maybe some side boob or just like a little bit of male butt, you know, for a flash. But eventually I landed on a film, to Adrian's point, has a lot of F-bombs in it and a lot of horrible violence, including violence that involves children. So it's not by any means a tame film. but it's nudity and it is a horror film and it is directed by a woman.
Yay!
Besides, you know, lots of violence, you know, in the American rating system, that's like a PG. You just can't show any nipples.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can shoot as many kids as you want as long as nobody gets naked. It's PG. PG-13, maybe.
That's our national motto.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. Shoot as many kids as you want.
That's what South Park learned with their animated movie. You can have all the violence you want on screen. You just can't have foreskin on a dildo. That's where they draw the line.
People are so picky.
Oh, yeah. Becky's first choice was Ravenous, right? And I was just like, oh, damn it.
That's an awesome movie. Yeah.
I want to go
Ravenous. The Invitation was another one I was thinking of. And then another film called Honeymoon. But yeah, they all have a little bit, just a little bits of nudity.
Did Lena Wertmuller ever make a horror movie? Feel like if you're doing a whole female director thing, she'd be a good one to include.
I can't think of any.
She mostly did comedies, but.
Well, so Adrian, were you able to find any box office data on Tigers?
So I was not able to find a budget. It mostly got a small release. The box office is actually in the thousands of dollars, but I can give you the Mexican box office on this one. So that would be November 3rd of 2017. Does anybody remember 2017?
It was yesterday.
That was like 30 years ago, right?
Before the robot wars.
I was going to say before our overlords came.
So it opened at number 7 in Mexico. And it was behind stuff like Thor Ragnarok, Pokemon the movie I Choose You.
Oh my god.
And a movie I didn't even know existed, Jeepers Creepers 3.
Oh yeah. Oh,
they got
god.
To make a third one of that.
Yeah, that was mostly, I thought, a direct Sci-Fi Channel movie.
Well, apparently it went Citadel, to theaters in Mexico, but Victor Salva somehow got to keep making movies for 30 years after, close to 40 years after the, no, it's more like 30, yeah.
A new one got announced, unfortunately. Another Jeepers Creepers film is going to be made.
I love the first one just because of the fact that he has a license plate that says
be eating you,
which means he must have gone to the DMV.
Well, like, no,
I want a plate that says beating you.
you guys remember Eric, Jeepers Creepers, that movie was like his kryptonite. He would go into a rage talking about Jeepers Creepers. Saying it starts out as one thing and then it just turns into another thing. You can't do that. You just do one thing and that's your movie. You choose one.
Oh, never show this person From Dusk Till Dawn.
I was gonna say.
I don't think they'll be alive the next day.
That one didn't bug him, but when it involves the Jeepers Creepers monster, he gets all upset.
I guess some people can't handle the flesh walls. I don't know. Oh,
and Donnie and I just watched Psycho Gorman.
I love PG. It's great.
It's awesome.
It's perfection, except for the fact that it wasn't involving us in any way.
Yeah. You know what that film could have used?
Linda, you must be awfully disappointed with this.
Well, I just feel like this is a movie that Donnie and I could have made straight out of our childhood.
I get that feeling sometimes too, but it's rarely a good thing.
You know, Linda and Donnie could have made this. This is real shit. I'm sorry, I'm totally getting us off topic. Becky, do you want to tell us a little bit about the movie Tigers Are Not Afraid?
Yeah, sure. So the film is essentially about the drug wars in Mexico and the children that are caught in the wake of all this violence and destruction. So essentially these kind of warlords come to town and wipe out a lot of the adults. Like maybe they bring some of the men to become part of their gangs or kill them, you know, do horrible things to women. And then that leaves a lot of the kids just orphaned in these ghost towns, throughout Mexico. And so the film centers around a group of kids, who are orphaned and, do we want to have spoilers or not? I guess I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah, that's totally fine.
Okay, we don't tend to shy away from them ourselves.
Okay, cool. So essentially the protagonist of the film is this girl named Estrella, whose mother disappears suddenly. And she gets, it's kind of a convoluted plot, but she gets these three pieces of chalk from her teacher that are somehow bestowed with power in her brain, that they are magical pieces of chalk and that they're her three wishes, because they're exploring fairy tales in school in contrast to all the horrible violence that's happening outside of the school walls. And of course, like a child might, she uses this chalk to wish that her mom would come back. And what ends up happening is her mom does come back in the form of a ghost and starts haunting the apartment that she was in. And so she doesn't want to be in there anymore. So obviously, as an adult watching this, you know, her mom is dead and now her spirit or presence is haunting. And her wish may or may not have brought her back in that form. And so she befriends another group of kids on the street and they end up on a quest to, I guess, avenge their parents. So that would be the summer. It's hard to talk about it in a very succinct way. It's like a crime film mixed with a lot of supernatural horror elements, I guess. So yes. Horror drama.
And the kid, I hope I'm pronouncing this right. I think Shine.
Yeah, it's spelled like Shine, but it's.
I just say Shine.
They said Shine, I think, in the...
Yeah, I think so. He ends up stealing one of the big guys in the drug cartel. He steals his phone as well as his gun. Yeah.
But we can call each other dumbass on that gun.
The phone apparently has this big drug warlord's... also a politician. It has him on film killing a woman beating up and killing a woman who, spoiler, turns out to be Estrella's mom. Oh, yeah. It's great. You know, I love the magical realism and the fact that she went with this sort of... I know she said that she kind of wanted to make it look like a documentary, but that just happens to have supernatural elements in it. And I'm a sucker for like the deep psychological horror movies. And this one, I really felt hit all the marks for me, but it is a little convoluted with the plot, but that being
said. And
those
two kids have a microwave.
They have a microwave and a TV.
And a throne made out of tires.
They're somehow hooking up to the power lines. I don't know. Yeah. Kids can be really resourceful.
And keeping
the
cell phone charged.
If that's the plot detail that's a problem, then I think the movie's doing okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, it all pretty much made sense. Yeah.
And the kids, for being, you know, child actors, they're, and having no acting experience prior to this, they're doing a pretty damn good job too. I feel like that must be hard to find a kid who can do that convincing a job.
Yeah, I was reading that through the casting process, they saw 600 children, and then Issa Lopez, the director herself, saw over 200. And they ended up using an acting coach from another film that this really reminds me of, which is City of God. It's a Brazilian film from 2002. Yeah.
I did see that one.
Has a lot of kids. Yeah, it's very similar in terms of just about, you know, kids, streetwise kids kind of growing up in what feels like a hopeless environment.
Yeah.
And so the acting coach for that was also used in Tigers Are Not Afraid, which is funny because like the whole time I kept thinking about City of God during the the movie. And then I was reading later. I'm like, oh, it was also one of Lopez's inspirations as well.
It fits. I kind of feel like a lot of, I don't know about it. I don't know about it being deeply psychological, but I really felt it was very Del Toro-esque, and just how he very, very naturally, unlike some other directors, can just kind of make something into a living fairy tale. And it's, I kind of got that from this. I wasn't expecting that from it, but it was a good story. I mean, what she did in it, I understand why some people didn't like it, because you have, from a lot of the reviews I read on it, you have a lot of people who were split expecting this to be more about the horror and atrocity of their life. And they didn't like it being made light of, or saying, oh, well, if they're in a fairy tale world, then everything's going to be perfect and fine for them. It's like, you have to find hope somewhere. It's like, even when you're poor, it's like having something warm to eat makes you feel good for even just a micron of a minute. And that's going to be enough to carry you for a while.
Well, and they're kids. So it's like all about, you know, being resilient. And as Becky was saying, like resourceful.
Yeah.
And, you know, kids.
Getting shot sometimes.
Sometimes.
Well, it's nice having just a look at their life instead of just focusing. Like, this is not Narco. It's like you're not going to focus on the violence. You're just focusing with how they deal with it and how they just go about their lives in that. Kind of, I don't know if it was Emperor of the Sun or not, but about what was going on with World War. I think that was World War II.
That was not
the one with Christian Bale, but yeah.
Oh yeah, that was Empire of the Sun with Christian Bale.
Yeah,
as a kid.
Yeah,
J.G. Ballard, such a good writer.
Jeez. Adrian hates everybody and everything.
I don't hate everybody and everything ever.
He just likes the esoteric stuff.
He's very confident.
No, I'm just picky.
Adrian's not afraid.
I'm not afraid. No.
To take a stand.
He's been through the worst. And he's come out the other side.
Well, I did do 4 years in the video store trenches.
That's true.
That's true, yeah. I mean, before you came to this video store, right?
Right, at that other video store.
You're a veteran. Foreign video stores.
Of a thousand psychic wars.
Yeah, people ask you for recommendations. He just gets that 1,000-yard stare. He really likes that Sylvester Stallone poster. It's like, no, just leave him be.
Oh, I want to write The Breakup. I don't know. Everybody else hated it. Oh, no, I'm going to love The Breakup. You know, 24 hours later. Why didn't you tell me it was so bad? It's like, I was there
when the shit hit the fan.
Oh, Mr. and Mrs. Smith looks so good. Well, everybody else really hated it. Oh no, I'm gonna love it.
Oh, but yeah, I don't know. I feel like this, it's kind of a story about, you know, kids being kids. And while, you know, like, what's the character's name? Moro? He was so, they don't know why, like what he saw, but whatever it was traumatized him so much he can't speak. And with the, you know, yet still he and the other kids who are, you know, if they're not orphans, they pretty much may as well be orphans. Even though they've been through so much, they're still kids, and they still let their imagination Yeah, and I feel like it's like I've seen somewhere that made a connection between them and Peter Pan and Wendy and the Darlings, and I kind of felt like that was a good connection to make as well.
Yeah, Captain Hook just wanted that cell phone back.
That's all he cared about.
Fetch me out that doodle-doo. He has my iPhone.
Yes, sir, Captain Hook.
I was thinking about something earlier that Donnie said in respect to the reviews, criticizing the film for not being bleak enough is what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to make these people happy.
It's already pretty bleak. I mean, two kids are straight up murdered in the film in very horrific ways. And people watch their parents get killed. Okay, that aside, but it's interesting you bring it up because the original ending was supposed to have the other kids in kind of that group besides Estrella, they were supposed to turn out to be gangsters in the end. So it was kind of representing this cycle of violence that these kids grow up and that's all they know. And then they become the people that they were despising as kids. And then as she was writing it, she was like, no, this is too much. This is too dark. I need some hope in this film. And she's like, this ultimately, she's like, became so engrossed in the character, she's like, that's not what this film is about. So she tweaked it and revised it to say that, hey, at any point you can make a decision and you can change your life. You can be headed down a path and still choose to do the right thing, which in some ways is a much stronger message and more powerful message than, guess what? Cycles of violence repeat themselves. We all kind of know that already.
Yeah, we know that. Yeah.
We don't need another depressing reminder of it.
At all.
I kind of felt like it would be a great origin story because I would want to see how Estrella and the boys grow up. And
if
like,
she escaped
her...
the tiger that escaped the zoo.
No, I'm Linda.
That's the deleted scene as she's walking out to the field. The tiger just
she nods with respect to the tiger. The tiger nods back. She walks on the other side of the door, and then all of a sudden,
this is actually a prequel. Don't you remember? This is the origin story to that well known. Film series? No. Three wishes, my child.
This is not... Oh, God. I almost did for a remake of this.
Is that a
Wishmaster? Yeah. Wishmaster
I literally
happened.
Was going to tie this in for a script doctor saying the Wishmaster meets Tiger for a break. One day we'll get Leprechaun and Wishmaster together in space.
Yeah.
It's what everybody's clamoring for.
Exactly.
Right now, listeners, you can join our Patreon and our Kickstarter.
But I mean, it's like, like we were saying, it's just having some kind of hope. I believe I read something where the director said she tried balancing out the film where it's like about 50% dark, 50% light, something about a good versus evil type battle going on with that. And you can see that in the film. It's pretty apparent in there. It's nice. But this... It's one of those things that I feel like if they had gone dark, even in a fantasy route, it's not going to be like a Pan's Labyrinth. And you don't exactly want to go back to Pan's Labyrinth either, where you have the person you've been cheering for getting shot and then dying in front of you. Yeah. It's Spoiler. Like you're just more
you know,
sad. It's been a few years, Linda. Yeah.
We know that Del Toro saw this. He liked this one. He put this on his list.
Yeah.
Del Toro officially put Tigers You're Not Afraid on his fridge.
Yeah.
Well, on his fridge. He got his magnet. He's like, you see this? Very good, Issa.
His refrigerator
right up the front of the fridge.
Well, he's going to work with her on another movie.
Yeah, they're working on a supernatural werewolf western.
Which sounds... pretty
That's
dope.
Awesome.
I'm not gonna lie.
It does. Yeah, because he's gonna be a producer. So I'm like, how do we make this happen? I need to know how to make this happen sooner.
what I need to know is what does Linda know? What do you have to offer us?
Quite a bit, actually.
Oh, do tell.
We feel like we're missing some sort of sound.
Well, we've been missing a lot of our audio sounds, but yeah.
I gotta call into corporate about that.
I'll give it to you, Linda. Since we made it, we'll play it for you.
Linda knows stuff. Don't act all surprised. I'm allowed to know stuff.
Let me
get my pipe back in so I have a little bit more authority.
Where's your beard? You got to grow your beard.
Wish you could be Leonard Maltin.
Leonard Maltin.
Just a few things. Isa Lopez said that she had been conducting interviews with many experts, researching a film about the Mexican drug cartels during World War II. And so many of these professionals brought up the subject of the children who had been displaced, orphaned, and left alone in the current drug cartel crisis, if I can talk. The movie for which she was researching, unfortunately, fell through. But she was still fascinated about the topic of the child victims of the crisis, and that's what influenced her to create this film. But she was, speaking of being influenced, Guillermo del Toro, Stephen King, and Neil Gaiman have all expressed their love for this movie, which really flattered Lopez because she said that all three of them had influenced her work. And she said that it was including The Devil's Backbone, Pan's Labyrinth, It, The Body, and which you may know because it ended up becoming sort of Stand By Me, sort of, kind of.
And not a made-for-TV McGarris adaptation, thank goodness.
No. And The Sandman by Neil Gaiman, of course. But they all kind of became champions for this movie. And as you were saying earlier, Guillermo del Toro ended up wanting to work with her. So, yeah, 2019, she said that he'll be producing her werewolf Western, which it kind of sounds like everything we need right now. She shot the movie in 2015 and submitted it to 4 international film festivals, and it was rejected each time before the Fantastic Fest finally picks it up in 2017. So 2 years later. Yeah, that's all I've got that we haven't covered already.
Dumb old film festivals rejecting stuff.
I know.
It's interesting. She said that basically all the ones that rejected it were all like the, you know, prestigious film festivals like the Sundance and exactly. And she said, she was like, why don't I try genre film festivals? And then, you know, once Fantastic Fest accepted it, just got into all the big genre fests after that. And she said that she didn't think the film would have been as successful outside of the genre space, because the fans are really supportive and welcoming of the film. So go genre nerd.
Yeah.
Well, that's the great thing. Kind of like what Donnie was saying earlier, that there are some people who don't really see it as horror, but they see it as sort of allegory for, you know, what's going on with the cartel crisis and what's been going on. And also there's that element of not trusting the police and officials being corrupt. And
you try to show the police something on your cell phone and they're like, oh no, I know that guy, I'm out.
Yeah, they were like, Jesus. Yeah. Whoop, gotta be hitting that dusty trail.
RUNNOFT.
I forgot I left a watermelon in the oven. Goodbye.
Oh my god. Why is that man warming a watermelon? Don't tell me.
But then there are also some people who see it as not really a drama, not really magical reality, but more on the horror genre. And either way, I feel like, you could see those influences of early Guillermo del Toro. And I loved it when he did it, too, where it's just like it's just taking a story that may have been told in some form or another before, but just giving us something completely different and genre bending. And I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I don't think people have to be so precious about their genres, right? Like,
yeah.
Different people take different things out of it. It's clearly not, it doesn't have a place in one bucket of genre. It dips its toes in all sorts of things, which I think is awesome. And I think horror is a great way to explore trauma, grief, all of these persistent themes, especially lately in horror. It's like you say grief, exploration of grief. That's like every other movie by A24 lately. But, yeah. But I think it's
our
so
last
effective
one on the Babadook.
Yeah. Yes. That one is hits the hammer on the head with the metaphor.
Yeah.
It's a great movie, but it's also a very obvious film in a lot of ways. I think that's what Tigers Are Not Afraid does really well is horror is an amazing channel of empathy for, you know, these kids that maybe you have no way of really relating to, but it really puts you in their shoes in two ways. One, just like experiencing all the terrifying things that happen to them, as well as through the kind of magical realism lens of like the child's imagination and, you know, kind of that childlike fantasy that allows you to interpret the world and process these really traumatic things in a way that you can understand as a kid, even if it's maybe not 100% correct. And that's why I like the film. It doesn't really ever tell you if the sort of supernatural elements are actually happening or if it's just kind of through the lens of its protagonist. And I appreciate that about it because to me it's like, well, maybe it's really happening. Maybe it's not. This is what's important is this is the way this child is processing her trauma and understanding.
A piano on fire.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's the most important part. I can't believe I didn't bring that up earlier. Shit.
That's what I'm here for.
That's kind of why I feel that even though people really tend to crap on horror itself, it's a genre that's endured. And it's one of those that I can't remember. I think it was Eli Roth of all people that actually said it. But a lot of people have made a similar comment that with horror, there's other films, people generally do not remember a lot of it because it's so much the same crap being pumped out continuously to a point even some independent films can get that way too. But with horror, they really touch on a lot of subjects that you may not perceive as what they usually would see as horror, which is like Friday the 13th, Halloween, something like that. But they actually do kind of get on topics that do strike a nerve with people. And usually with horror, those films still get talked about even way after they've been put out. And it's just kind of an enduring love I think people have with the genre, even though people still like to crap on the genre because they have just this idea in their head of what it's supposed to be. And then they don't like when these movies get lumped in with that because like, what are you doing in my tits and gore? It's like, I don't want you here. Like,
you
I don't
got
want
peanut
to
butter in
watch
my tits
this.
And gore.
Like with the movie Lucky, I really enjoyed the movie Lucky, but like it, like so many other movies on Shudder, you see so many comments on there like, this doesn't belong on here. It's not horror. It's not scary. Blah blah blah. Yeah. And you know, it's really it's hard because it's really just it's relative. I mean, what's your idea of horror?
Well, genres are not set in stone, and categorization is really elusive. I remember the first time I saw Natural Born Killers on VHS on a shelf in a video store. It was in the adventure section. Not comedy, adventure. It's like, yes, they're on a mystical quest. It's like romancing the stone.
With more murder.
Slightly more.
I want to see that on Pulp Fiction's box. It's like Romancing the Stone. But with murder.
I wish I had a pot belly. If you had a pot belly, I'd punch you in it.
Oh, God. So, how about them Dodgers?
Yeah, I mean, it's true, though, with Pulp Fiction. It's just, you know, exactly like it, just a little more horror, a little more, murder, and Tim Roth.
Oh,
A little bit country.
Yeah, a little bit rock and roll.
I guess so.
So, Becky, if you wouldn't mind, I had a couple questions for you as a creator.
Sure. Go for it.
So, what and or who would you say are your top influences?
Oh. Well, as cliche as it is, John Carpenter. Halloween Ooh. Was what made me want to make movies. Ooh. I, you know, remember watching it when I was 13 and just being terrified that Michael Myers was in my doorway as a kid. And I was just fascinated by that and immediately wanted to learn everything about the making of the movie. So definitely John Carpenter. Halloween and The Thing remain two of my favorite films of all time, of course. Let's see. So other films that were big for me, Evil Dead series through, you know, Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, and Army of Darkness. I'm a big horror comedy fan, and especially Army of Darkness. Like, is the most infinitely quotable film of all time. So that has always been hugely impactful in my kind of brand of horror and humor, I suppose.
Groovy.
Yes. Always groovy. let's see, what else? I don't know how much time you have.
Well, we've got a while, but
the influences are really long. Scream was also really big for me. So I guess Wes Craven in general as a human being was important. But Scream really taught me the language of movies and the whole idea of like this meta self-referential thing. It made me want to go back and explore all the films it was referencing since I was like 9 when the movie came out, 9 or 10 when Scream came out. I was much far too young when I started watching everything.
Bonnie and I are like the poster children for that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I had seen at the time all of the Child's Play movies that were out by the time I was 5. So it's like, yeah, I just loved that thrill of being scared. And I always wanted more of it. And something that's a really weird influence on me was do you remember Michael Jackson's Thriller music video?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There was this VHS tape that we had that was like a behind the scenes making
of.
Yeah,
we had the same tape.
Yeah.
Everybody seemed to have this, you know, right? In the early 90s, yes. I guess. It's, I don't know why, but I think they sold it at Costco in like 1992 for some reason. Okay. And so everybody
came for free
had it.
With every VHS.
It was kind of a very
VCR.
But I watched that over and over and over because
so did we.
I love werewolves. So the werewolf transformation, of course, because John Landis directed it, is epic and amazing. And I thought it was like actually a pretty scary scene as a kid. I wasn't scared by the zombies. That stuff was all like fun because zombies have never scared me. I don't know. Zombies and vampires just don't scare me. Werewolves, on the other hand, are terrifying. And we need more werewolf movies, so I'm really looking forward to Issa Lopez's werewolf movie. But that was big because it like went behind the scenes and like deconstructed the makeup and everything. And that was like where I started thinking about horror and movies as like a magic trick. So I always think about that anytime I'm making something. I'm like, oh, this is just a magic trick.
That's actually
a magician.
I like you. I have that tape embedded in my mind forever because I actually got shamed in my 5th grade class for bringing it in as a show and tell item. And I'm like, half the class is bored out of their mind with it. But I'm like, what is wrong with you people? This is awesome. And it's like things like that. And it was on Dawn of the Dead where they had the same thing. They had a documentary making of with Tom Savini showing all his stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I just watched that continuously, and it got me on this track of watching every behind-the-scenes thing I could, reading Fangoria as a kid, and just loving everything I was seeing of how they did these tricks and buying a makeup kit and trying out things on myself, making masks and such like that.
Yep. Any interview with him is really worthwhile.
he is, and he's an adorable man. He's a wonderful, adorable man.
Yeah.
Well, we were really lucky enough to live in Southern California at the time, so we got to go to what is that? That place in LA that
Dark
where they
Delicacies?
Gave Oh, they gave us a
Cinema Secrets.
Yes, Cinema Secrets.
Oh, the makeup company.
Yeah. And they did some like great demonstrations, and they showed us how to put like a bolt through our foreheads. And so, like, I think I got into horror because Donnie's a little over a year older than I am, and I wanted to be cool like my brother. And so, I just kind of followed him around for the whole genre. But when we were kids, we also went to. Our parents are cool enough to have taken us to a Fangoria Weekend of Horror convention.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Donnie got to meet Clive Barker, right? And I got to meet Bruce Campbell, and I got his autograph. And, but back then, I think it was just before Army of Darkness came out. So
yeah,
I was the only person in his line.
Yeah, this was when Evil Dead 2 came out, because his table – was not even kidding, like right near the door, there was nobody there for him, Ted, or Sam Raimi at all.
What?
And my sister just walked right up to them, and that's why I loved it, because it's like, I didn't notice them at first, and that's why I loved, like, it didn't really hit at first, I had to kind of, like, go into it, but he wrote on there for Linda, "Dear Linda, never change." And like, aww, there is a character in the movie
did.
Named Linda, and she changes into a horrible monster. Do you see this?
And he even signed it, Ash.
That's amazing.
Do you remember why we went to Cinema Secrets, though?
No.
Because because I had written them because I was getting into making prosthetics, and I'm like, I want to make a mold of my arm. It's like, gosh, I'm going to need a lot of latex to do this, because you can only find in stores those tiny little like 8-ounce bottles. So I told them, I was a kid, I'm like, I'm going to need like 10 gallons of latex. So they contacted our parents like, we're calling for Don Roberts, and we just want to see about his order he was asking about for 10 gallons. So my dad's like, what the like, well, I guess we're gonna go down there and see what this place is, because Donnie's interested.
That's amazing.
We got into quite a bit of trouble at school, but every single year we won the scariest pumpkin contest.
Year. And I know we're getting off topic again, but I don't care. When you mentioned a horror comedy, it is a genre that needs so much love.
Yes.
And my fiance, she hasn't seen a lot of any movies, so I've just been corrupting her mind with so many movies and so much trash. But to get her to watch horror, I'm like, we're gonna watch something called House. And House.
Oh, yay!
It's like, we're gonna watch these movies that are acceptable horror and also fun, because you have to see that these things can be fun, not just when are they getting naked, when are the body parts exploding.
Yeah.
And they even enjoyed Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2 and Prince of Darkness, which still is like the biggest hallmark of a big budget horror comedy.
Prince of Darkness needs more appreciation.
It does, but it doesn't need Sam Raimi making 10,000 more different versions of it to put out on Blu-ray and DVD.
When we were really little. My mom never, like, my parents didn't care about, like, we had no filter, which is probably to our detriment. It's probably why I have PTSD now.
Barbie survived.
Oh, whatever. But I remember, like, my mom tells this story all the time about how Donnie got, I think it was Superman from the video store.
Oh,
and
dear.
Or no, it wasn't Superman. I can't remember what it was, but
it was.
And
the
she
first.
Noticed that he kept giggling, and I think you were
forbidden.
Supposed to be like what, like
forbidden.
Six or something.
Yes,
at the time
I was innocent.
And he just kept laughing and giggling, and my mom's like, Superman's not a funny movie. What is going on? So she goes back
not
there.
Not funny, haha.
Now the story changes. Like, sometimes it's that somebody put Leatherface in the box, and sometimes the story is that it was Debbie Does Dallas.
That's what it was. It was Debbie Does Dallas. This was a very special video clerk who really loved me, because she tried telling me that it was a very funny horror movie she thought I really liked, because at one point a man gets his pee-pee cut off, and it was I Spit on Your Grave. And she was trying to get some kid under 10 years old to watch I Spit on Your Grave. And I'm kind of like, that woman loved her job.
Everybody should see Myers Archie, I Spit on Your Grave.
You know, I don't think it's a bad thing to have young men watch that movie.
You know what? Better learn
straight.
Early.
Yeah. It does give you some respect. Yes.
We should show them in public schools now.
Becky, how old were you when somebody slipped Debbie Does Dallas into your video cassette at the store?
I don't even know how.
Can I be 10 years old when that happens? That sounds great.
Oh God, I miss video stores. I mean, besides ours, obviously.
Well, if I can veer us back to Tigerland, I do have. There actually, thankfully, wasn't that many bad reviews for this film.
I still have some questions for our guest, if you don't mind.
Well, you can, because I also had some questions, but by all means.
Okay.
I have a question before you answer. Question.
I'm sorry. That was my fault. But have you always been interested in becoming a storyteller? Or?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Since I was a kid, like telling spooky campfire stories is something like I always loved scaring the crap out of my little brother. And when we were camping, that was something we'd do. Like, I would write down the stories in advance, like, practice them, and then tell him. And if I could get him so scared that he was in tears when he had to go walk back to the tent, I did a great job. So, yes, I've always been interested in horrifying people. I think it's also, like, when I was a kid, I would make, like, I made a haunted house in our basement, and I just really loved torturing my friends and making them go through it.
Oh, but, you're living my dreams.
I counted my victories by the tears shed. But I think I've always just been fascinated by, like, getting a reaction out of people and making them feel something through something imaginary. It's funny. I recently found when I was going through, like, old, like, keepsakes at my parents' house, you know, when you're in, like, second grade, you made those like laminated books where you would draw it's some of them was like, oh look, I made like the Lion King in my way, and or Jurassic Park but told through my perspective, and there was like a little about the author section, and these are when I was like 7 years old, but it's like wants to be, it's always like an artist, a writer, and it's like favorite book, Goosebumps. So it's like, it's just in my DNA. And apparently I also claim to have wrote Jurassic Park 3, because it says other books by this author, and I put Jurassic Park 3.
We have you to thank for that.
Yes, you're welcome. I wish I had written the second one, because that gymnastic scene, that's like the gym cottage shit.
They cut you from the team?
God. Yeah, I think Donnie and I got in trouble a couple times for those books that we that were laminated.
They were some spirited youngsters, they were.
I remember you got in trouble because you wrote a story about cannibalism, and then I got in trouble.
On the Oregon Trail.
Oh, yeah. Of course. I mean, it's right there. Oregon is in the word.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Like, and then I got in trouble because I used to always make stories and tell them, and usually they were scary stories, and the teacher didn't yell at me. They just told me to sit back down. Because she noticed I had nothing written on the paper in front of me. I was just spouting out stories. I was making it up to the classroom. And she's like, you haven't turned a page in forever. What's going on here? And she looks like,
very small.
You can sit down now. I was like, but I wasn't done yet. It's like, sit down. Like, okay.
You need to fake read better, Donnie. That was the real lesson.
I know. Damn teleprompters.
We don't need these. I'm Donnie. I do it from the head.
We're doing this live.
If you could make your dream movie with your dream cast and or crew, what would that look like?
Oh.
Werewolves on Ice?
I mean,
I do have a werewolf script that I like. It's like a Bonnie and Clyde meets werewolves. I love it. You know, the movie I want to make probably would change from time to time, but right now I have this story that I really like that I describe as Mad Men meets Die Hard meets I Spit on Your Grave.
That's amazing.
Bring it back.
Oh my God.
Yes. Well, I really like telling stories that have some other like meaning, whether it's like I'm channeling something personal that really usually it's something that pisses me off. That's probably my common thread as a writer. I'm like pissed off about an issue and then I write about it, and horror is a really great place to take that out because you get to like kill people and stuff in your head. To be clear. This one, it's a difficult script because it tackles a lot of serious issues, but it's done in this heavily satirical way, kind of like maybe a God Bless America. If you've seen that, it's like that style.
That's so good.
A little bit of like maybe Falling Down-esque, but it's nice. From a woman's perspective of like just getting fed up with all the sexist shit about being stuck in this boys' club at her job. And then it all like explodes and all goes down in like one office building in real time. I would love to make that. It's hard to get financing for movies. I would just want like, hey, you know, give me $10 million. I'll make 4 movies with that money that are all good movies, but I don't need a ton of money for each film.
You don't want to take $300 million and make one really bad movie like they do now? You don't want to do that one?
Marvel, damn it.
Yeah.
We ought to hook Becky up with Lynn Kabasinski.
Yes.
Yes.
Let us know when you get the Kickstarter thing going.
That is actually a question I did have, was just from directing and filmmaking perspective. It's like, how difficult do you find it raising money for projects? And what would you say is like the, not so much an approach that worked for you, but just a path you found that seemed the right one that somehow just sprung up like, gosh, why weren't we doing this before?
Yeah. So every project's a little different. The only time I've ever been able to get movies made is just by raising the money independently or saving up my own money. It's, believe it or not, there's not a lot of people out there that are just willing to give you money for your art.
Don't we know it?
Yes. everything's very consolidated now, you know, with media, like Disney owns half the world.
Yes.
And they're putting more and more money into smaller, or fewer projects. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So it's a challenge. To me, it's like, whatever route works for you is the best route. Don't try and focus on what somebody else did, because you have your own set of connections and resources. Even if you don't think you have connections, you probably do. You just have to be like, get out there and like go to local film festivals. If you can't travel, it's not everybody has the means to do that, but like go to local film festivals, go to conventions, just meet people. You will expand your network, even if they're not big names or anything. There are more people that you can rely on to support you, and make a list of all the resources you have where it's like, hey, my parents live on this really cool property. It has a lot of, you know, for example, my parents live on 10 acres and a lot of it's just forest. So most of my movies, I'm like, what can I do in the middle of a forest? Well, good thing I like making horror movies about, you know, people getting killed in the woods. So that's a resource, and that actually costs money for a lot of people to go shoot in the forest.
Yeah.
They have to go to a national park or something and get permission and all of that. And I didn't have to do any of those things. Or like maybe you are friends with somebody that has like a grocery store or a convenience store or something. And you're like, hey, that's a cool shooting location. That gives you value. So just like think about all the things you have, all the people you know. Maybe you have a cool friend that's a great artist. Like, great, maybe they can do your poster for you. Just like start making lists of those things and not wait for anything to happen. But yeah, I've tried so many different ways to raise money. I'm a Shutter Labs fellow. So Shutter back in the day did a filmmaking retreat sponsored by AMC, and I got to go do that, and it was like this amazing, it's one of the most amazing experiences of my life. It was like basically you go up to upstate New York and stay in this freaking haunted mansion and in the workshop, and you get like coached by all these people about your story and your scripts and amazing and like great experience. I got to meet a lot of great people who are now my friends. Still didn't get a movie made from that. I participate in Frontiers, which is Fantasia Film Festival's kind of co-production market, which is specifically geared towards indie genre filmmakers looking to raise money for their projects. Still didn't get anything off the ground, but it's like all those like almost there where it's like, hey, somebody's interested in reading your script. And you're like, wouldn't it be amazing if, you know, this Spectre Vision wanted to make your script? They read it. They're like, not a fit for us right now, but come back next time. It's like you get that over and over and over again. So you just got to keep trying. But, you know, like nothing will happen if you don't put yourself out there and try. That's the one way to guarantee you don't get your movie made is by doing nothing. So,
yeah. And I feel like that kind of fits in with what a lot of filmmakers have said to before, like Lloyd Kaufman, Robert Rodriguez, and Joe Bob even was saying, like, you know, it's now's the best time to do it because you don't, it's not so expensive to get the equipment and it's not so exclusive as it was back in the day. But it's easier now. That being said, the stories of those shoestring budget movies becoming, you know, blowing up and becoming, huge blockbuster successes, they're amazing stories because they're rare. Unfortunately. Yeah.
And they're becoming more rare, right? Because, yes, all that stuff is more accessible. That means you have 20 times the amount of people that are doing that same thing as you. So I don't like to say, oh, that means it's more a competition, because I don't look at it that way. Because, like, hey, I'm happy with anybody that's successful. It just, you know, great for the film industry, great for genre filmmakers, whatever. But yeah, that does mean that there's a lot more content out there now. So it's like, it just gets buried.
Under all those suburban Sasquatches.
Oh, suburban Sasquatch. But I mean, you are right. And it's one of those things that, talking to Ted Raimi for a while when we went to, Crypticon here in Seattle, it's like, I got to tell him about how much I loved the behind the scenes stuff of the making of Evil Dead and how many years it took them to do that. And how I just kept thinking of the same thing when my sister's now ex-boyfriend many moons ago asked me and my friend to be in a movie they were making. And my sister's glad her name was misspelled in the credits because it means she doesn't have to associate with the film. But it's like, as horrible as the people were that made the film, just being out there in the woods, freezing ass cold with nothing but like a little gas heater someone had as for like everyone to crowd around. And the only food you had was cut up hot dogs that weren't even cooked, put in with Hormel chili in a pot.
Oh.
It's like, you know, this is horrible. I've been here for like 8 hours, but God, I love this.
I got zombie to help out with the makeup woods. Too. And that was a lot of fun. I mean, I didn't get credit
exist.
For it, but
you can't find it anywhere.
It's like, I told him, it's like things like that made me want to go and make a movie because it's like, if some, I will say, if some asshole can like brag on film about how they were taking free food from like donation centers meant for the homeless to feed himself and the cast, and they can make a piece of crap movie, why can't I? And Sam Ray, I'm sorry, Ted
story
Ray
of inspiration.
Yeah, like, Ted just laughs. And he's like, you know, everyone's like, oh my God, it's so cool and inspirational what you guys got away with making that film and how big it became. It's like, we were just having fun. It's like, we weren't even thinking about how this was going to get in theaters. We're just like, we wanted to make this as a project, going out on weekends or days off and just filming and screwing around. He's like, but now when I go to film schools and I talk about what I've done, what my brother's done, or we're both there and we have to watch these films they make, he's like, the thing that bothers him is that in film schools, they're, I think they finally changed it. They put a budget balance for everyone to follow now, because he said you had like really, really rich people that would go out and say, I shot this 20-minute short film for $200,000. And it's the best looking piece of crap you've ever seen that nobody cares about. But then someone that's like, hey, I'm working two jobs and me and my friends made this for $1,500. You're welcome. It's like, at least it's fun. At least it's entertaining. You can tell that they enjoyed what they were doing. And it's like those type of films. And when you actually look at what you have, like you said, you just go through a resource checklist. You tend to enjoy yourself more instead of pulling your hair out going, what the hell am I doing? And then just expecting to hang yourself at the end and film it and call it art. It's just a lot of films can end up doing that. And a lot of people have sort of an unfair advantage of having all these millions of dollars available, are somehow just being charming enough to know people with all this money.
Yeah.
But even people that are told for 6 years or 5 years, no, repeatedly, when you eventually do get that yes, at least your work's out there. And for all you know, it can actually take off. And that's something that when Linda was telling us about your films and to watch The Last Buck Hunt, like, that was a funny as shit movie. And I loved
thank
it.
You.
It has to date the most the most whimsical soundtrack.
Yeah,
I mean, at one point I thought I heard a clown horn. I can't be sure, but I loved it.
Yes.
And the fact that camo tape can be used to cover every name brand on every piece of clothing and equipment.
That was
great. Oh, you noticed the small details. I love it.
Yes. I just, oh, God.
It's camo tape is a feature.
Like, speaking of a film that takes twists and turns.
Yes.
Oh, God.
I did not see that coming.
Well, sadly, neither did Remy. Which is my last question. Did America's Sweetheart Remy survive the attack, or are we all in for a night of lighting a candle?
I like to leave that to the audience's interpretation.
Thank you, Mrs. Lynch. I appreciate that.
No, he died.
He was pounced by a tiger at the end.
Yeah. You're not going to pull a carpenter in the thing and say, no, I'm not telling you who is infested or if anyone is. It's just, nope.
And then you end up burying your friend in a refrigerator.
Linda, do you have more
questions? Actually, that covers my final question of, did you have any advice for aspiring filmmakers? I mean, that pretty much covers it.
Adrian.
Have no wine before it's time. I was going to ask if you consider yourself an actor's director or more of like a Von Sternberg kind of dictator.
Wow.
I'm going to say neither.
Okay.
You don't have one or the other.
No, I mean, I guess I would lean more towards the actors. I think that's a big thing people oftentimes don't realize, that aren't people that aren't familiar with being on set, is how much the director's job is actually to work with the actors on set. Because in theory, everything else has already been planned out. In theory, major emphasis on in theory, because especially when you're shooting things for $10, like, everything's on the fly and you're doing 50 jobs. Yes, I generally, like, if things are going the right way, the director should be primarily there to coach the actors on set, and everybody else kind of already knows what to do. And then it's more of a spot check of like, yep, that looks right. That looks right. And then the inevitable problem solving that comes up, like, oh, this broke. What are we going to do? Or we can't shoot here anymore because the owner of the store flipped out or something. And you're like, okay, now we got to redirect.
And it's a motherfucking Sam Squatch.
Exactly.
Said Sam Squanch first with the Trailer Park Boys reference. Now I've got it in my head. Sorry.
Now
when the owner flips out, I whip out my phone and I make my film to go on World Star Hip Hop.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the lead actor asks you what is really going on and what the real motivation is, and you just backhand them and make sure you're wearing your heavy rings.
Yeah, I prefer to kick them in the shins because then it doesn't show up on their face. For you to be camera ready.
That's the advice we're looking for our listeners. This
making
is value.
A cat of nine tails out of red rope. It's a delicious snack, and it's good for beatings.
You make everything out of red vines here.
Like straws.
Just not Twizzlers.
Oh, God.
But I guess like Windows patient. To answer your question, I prefer, like, my approach is the absolute opposite of dictatorship. I guess, like, for me, it's like everybody's there to have fun above everything else. So nobody's getting hurt. Nobody's put in uncomfortable situations. I want to be the type of person that anybody on set can come to if they have a problem, big or small. And I also want to be a good listener if people have great ideas. So I don't run a tight ship that way. And I really hate things like Christopher Nolan being like, there's no chairs on my set. Nobody gets to sit down. And what?
Thank
people
you.
Are on set for 12 hours. They can sit down. I guarantee you he has a trailer with like a fireplace in it, you know.
Bidet.
A TiVo. And yeah,
a faucet that flows caviar.
Exactly.
Or bidet.
Bidet that flows caviar.
None of that. None of that. Or like David O. Russell flipping out on actors all the time. Like, that's just no. You should never be yelling on set unless you're the actor who's yelling in a scene. Yeah. Like that's I don't think there's ever a reason to do that. Unless something was like so wrong that like somebody did something really fucked up, like where it's like the kind of thing you get fired for or something, but like there's
like
no...
adjusting lights during an emotional scene.
Yeah, the Christian Bale.
Hey, that DP was doing what he does.
That was a very award-worthy emotional scene. Oh God!
Or if
the guy
Nicolas
in the
Cage.
Green screen robot suit doesn't get yelled at.
That was a good question, actually.
Yeah.
And response.
Good job, Adrian.
All around.
Are we ready for the rare bit of hate I found for this film?
Yes, yes. Spew the hate, Nani.
Like I said, it's surfing around. There are vastly more positive reviews for this versus negative. Like, the negative are almost just nigh existent. I mean, it's just not even there. But somebody did write a dissertation.
Of course, because there always has to be that one person.
Okay.
Well, let's see. Socially relevant? I'm at a loss as to how anyone could find this offensive movie socially relevant. Unless you have been living under a rock, you should already know a great deal about the horrors of the drug war in Latin America. I understand that this is supposed to portray how a child might view the horrors unfolding around them. I get that people want to applaud a director for choosing such a sensitive, horrifying subject. However, the fantasy and horror nonsense literally trivializes the reality of what is happening all the time in places like Mexico and Guatemala. So, while attempting to bring to the audience's attention the utter desperation and misery real people are suffering, the director thought it would be a good idea to throw in talking corpses. Grotesque talking corpses that move in the manner of The Grudge.
Not beautiful talking corpses.
It will never be okay to make a horror movie about this. It will never be okay until you raise a child. Until you raise a child, you will never, never understand.
Not to mention the fact that these atrocities are happening right now. While I applaud the young actors and their obvious skill, this movie is perplexing mix of hardcore reality meets cheap horror thrills. Not that this movie is scary, mind you. It is an overwhelmingly industrial dose of depression, with a bit of horror cheese thrown in for who knows why.
Jeez.
The critics, of course, are obliged to love anything that hints at being woke. A nightmarish hell that accomplishes little other than to capitalize off of the misery of others. You have been forewarned. That was a forewarning, apparently. And it gave me shivers. Down my butt.
It's so nice that there's a reviewer there who can give us our morals for us. That's so sweet. You know, I don't have to get my own now.
Yeah. Adrian, didn't they call your grandma cheap whore thrills?
I have familiar. Two living grandmas more than you, so you're just going to have to be specific, as I said before.
Here no comes Adrian bragging again.
My two surviving grandmas are in it for the long haul.
So lastly, we have say two words, Mexico, drugs, and we have fulfilled our image of that country. Now, add homeless street children and the fantasies they may have, and you have an idea of what this movie is about. A bit too fantasy-driven with moving graffiti on walls and other weird imagery to really get a feel for these kids' lives. Best part was the intro graphic of drug wars since 2006 of 160,000 dead and 43,000 simply disappeared. The English that these people type with is spellbinding.
Where are you finding these reviews? Yeah,
right. On Amazon and Google.
Okay.
People write such great reviews on Amazon. It's chilling.
I'm the new Rotten Tomatoes.
Fucking Rotten Tomatoes.
Ebert, is that you?
They are the multiple generation.
We're going to talk about this children's horror movie, but I'm going to take this opportunity to declare this movie is both racist and sexist. I'm not going to tell you anything I saw in the movie, but this movie was racist and sexist, wasn't it, Gene? Well, Roger, I think you're off base as usual. No, it was anti-Semitic is what it was. Oh, is it anti-Semitic?
You mentioned
counterculture.
You mentioned Rotten Tomatoes.
I did. Yeah. I dared.
But do you have FT there? Johnny?
Fuzzy tomato? Oh my
God. I was expecting you to pull out FT because you were just like, you mentioned tomatoes.
Attack of the Killer Tomatoes needs more love, okay? Then everyone can really know does. Fuzzy tomato.
Puberty, puberty love. There's nothing like puberty love.
So moving on.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm there.
Do you guys feel like it's time for script doctors?
Oh, God. I mean, yeah. I mean, why not? Here.
Donnie's obviously excited about it.
I don't have one. Okay.
Jesus Christ. I'll go first. Okay, so mine is just going to be turned into a musical. And so it's not just, what did that reviewer say? Horrifying talking corpses or something like that?
Grotesque.
Yeah. Oh, grotesque. Thank you. Yes. But now they're going to be grotesque talking corpses with jazz hands. It's going to be all about finding the spirit and the beat. Yeah. And also, I'm going to replace Sheena with Val Kilmer.
Oh.
Yep. He's going to play a child. Yes, on his knees throughout the whole thing, like tiptoe style.
No. My God.
This is my design.
Everyone has a dream.
Adrian?
Moi? Larry Clark's What's Up Tigers, you know, make it just really intentionally offensive, just shoot it in the LA area because you don't have to go anywhere, you know, include the token ghost, but mostly include token stereotypes. It's Larry Clark. Then include a Norman Mailer ending where the camera turns around and you actually see Larry Clark abusing the crew and then punching four dignitaries in the face. Larry Clark, everybody.
Fuck it. Just make it street trash. Why not?
Nolan, that would be too good. You know what you're doing? You're making light of this very serious situation. You're trivializing
it. A homeless situation with
that's just sad. Yeah. It's just sad, man.
Donnie, were you able to come up with one?
I was trying to write one before we started, and then you surprised me by not being in the bathroom for 15 minutes and then saying, let's go. So,
as I do. I mean,
if I had to, like I said, whoever survived the tiger mauling from the end of the film, which was cut, as we discussed, they now are working for the cartel until Mr. Satriani comes down playing a majestic guitar and then just sprinkles dust on all of them, which frees them. And it's not the kind of dust they have to pay like $10,000 a kilo for, but it's more like magical rainbow crap. And they go on a magical adventure to Detroit City because why not? And then it basically becomes Cheech Marin's Born in East L.A., but in Chicago.
Are you Detroit. Also mixing it with Crossroads with Ralph Macchio?
I mean, I kind of wanted to, but, you know.
Robert Johnson is not a girl, not anywhere. Yet a woman.
Oh, God, I need to see that movie again. And thank you for not just saying Crossroads, because I don't want people getting confused with that and Britney Spears' Crossroads. Because that was a magical adventure.
Britney Spears' Crossroads, where she's like, I'll see you at the crossroads, so you won't be lonely. I miss my Uncle Charles.
No. Bad. No.
Well, there's going to be a new Crossroads starring both Britney Spears and Ralph Macchio in 2023, yeah. And then you just won't know what to do.
I never brain, know what to do.
My brain is gone.
No.
We live in a world where they remade I Spit on Your Grave and they want to remake Drop Dead Fred, okay?
They made it into a trilogy. That's the worst part. It's like, for no reason at all, you're in Europe now.
Also
why am
making,
I in Europe?
Remaking Blazing Saddles and Seven Samurai into
and
a...
The Thing.
Like, and the thing, all, but these ones are all going to be in animation, right?
Well, Seven Samurai is just like all that Red Harvest adaptations. That's already abused to hell and back. Yeah. But like doing it to Blazing Saddles, that's not cool.
Yeah, but
I don't know. I'm not a remake hater. I'm fine with remakes. You still have your original. I mean, there's some that I'm like, I don't understand the purpose of them. In certain instances, I really don't like the trend of like taking a foreign film and then 1 year later making an English language American version
of it. The same director to remake their film with a different ending that's not as good.
Yeah, like that.
I.e. Spurloose.
Not great, but you know, in general, like there's some remakes. I mean, The Thing is a remake.
Yeah, and it's amazing.
And yeah, I'm one of the only people who likes the Howard Hawks version better, but you know, it's okay.
Yeah,
you're also
wrong.
The same person that with our topic this week chose a film noir crime drama for a horror with no nudity directed by a woman.
Hey, we were just saying genre lines are not set in stone. One of us chose a fantasy road trip picture. One of us chose a fantasy drama about loss, and
one of us just pulled a shitty version of
I'm
just saying, like, not, and also, you know, that's horror doesn't need to be supernatural. So
I agree about the remakes. I agree about the remakes because I still feel to this day the remake they did, I think it was Day of the Dead was the remake back in the 90s. I feel that film would not have been hated so much if they'd given it a different title. Because so many people held on to it so dearly. And then you have people debating the running zombies versus slow moving zombies. And it's dumb. But I prefer if you're going to remake something, bring something to the table. Don't just recreate scenes because that's what a lot of them do. It's like, hey, you remember this scene? You remember that scene? We're going to put that in this.
Remember Gus Van Sant?
Yeah.
Was it
Psycho?
That's what I was going to say with Psycho. It's like, what was the point? They were going for shot by shot. Yeah, it's like
the point was to show Anne Hesh's boobs.
Well, and the thing with the remake of The Thing, I guess, is they're going to be more closely following the book versus John Carpenter's take and the original Howard Hawks. Yeah. But they're also going by the newest version of the book, which has the just recently uncovered section of the book that was deleted from it. But there's really nothing that adds to it. It's just more about science talk and about discussing the origins of the blood test and such, and
well, it's not always better either.
Not exactly adding to it per se, but I mean, I'm always gonna love The Thing because it still stands up today and it's a wonderful movie. But I hope that the new one does something new to it.
I'm rooting for it. I would love it to be good. I don't want it to be bad. I mean, two remakes that really stand out to me as bringing a lot of new interest and depth. One is the Maniac remake with Elijah Wood. Yeah. I love where it's shot entirely from a first-person point of view.
That was very cool.
Which is a very bold move. It's a difficult film to watch because of that, but wonderfully acted, beautifully shot. And then the other one, The Invisible Man, Lee Whannell's Invisible Man remake, which completely changes the whole subtext of the story and modernizes it in a beautiful way. So those two remakes are ones I'm like, let's do more of that.
That was some good stuff.
Chase, John Carpenter.
It's not as bad as its reputation. People need to chill.
You know, and I still defend Starman. It's a great movie.
Starman is good.
Yes.
But it's kind of like how I know it's not a remake, but it's kind of how I feel about like Hellblazer versus the movie Constantine. It's like Constantine on its own, great fucking movie. But once you say this is John Constantine from Hellblazer, then it's like, that's not.
That's going to be the best screen adaptation, though. It's a great story from it. Because that show was terrible.
Oh, you're talking about I liked the show, but I mean.
Oh my god, dude. No, take a breath, for God's sake. It's like, no, we're going to cram as much dialogue as we can before the commercial. Hurry. It's a thing. There's a thing going on. Me and Mrs. Jones, hurry.
I'm actually curious. Go ahead, Linda. I didn't mean to cut you off.
I was just going to say that we've gone off on so many tangents that we didn't get to Becky's.
Yes.
Yes.
We're just jamming. We're a jam band now. Yeah. That's what we are.
This is what we do.
You showed up for, you know, a specific thing, and then we're not going to give you any of that thing. We're just going to give you a 30-minute drum solo.
This is not Cameo. We didn't pay you $100 for a 30-second greeting.
This is like the restaurant that Adrian always wanted to open called Not Ruby Tuesdays, but you can't always get what you want.
I thought you were going to mention Freddy's Diner, but okay.
You find a corner and go to it.
As Linda was saying, did you have a remake of the film?
Or sequel or prequel?
Yeah, I thought about this and I was like, and it's specifically for the reason I talked about, like, I don't really want like an American remake of this. It just feels like it's not appropriate at all.
Don't do what I did. Mine was terrible.
I probably didn't follow the assignment exactly because I know a little bit better about how you roll. But one thing that I think would have been really cool is I was thinking about all these different films that it reminded me of, and it'd be really cool to do some sort of anthology with different filmmakers who have all made this like type of film. It's like where you have the streetwise street kids, street twice, whatever, you know, getting revenge or like showing adults what's up and kicking ass. Like, I love that. It's one of my favorite things. Yeah. It's like kids kicking ass, and there's not enough of those now. It used to be like so many movies in the 80s, right? We grew up with all the Amblin type
stuff.
That was,
man.
And now,
because
they're trying to make these four quadrant films, you know, superhero shit, you don't get any more of the like Monster Squad style movies.
God, I love Monster Squad so much. So, kick him in the nards.
Exactly. Tigers Are Not Afraid is like that in a serious way. Very different type of movie. You don't get the same feeling watching it, but it's like that same thing where it's like giving a lot of respect to kids and like all the shit they are put through and what they are capable of. And so I was thinking about, you know, City of God, which we talked about, which is co-directed by a man and a woman. And Devil's Backbone, Guillermo del Toro's film, which I was thinking about. I love that film as well, for this mainly because of the kids. And then I was also thinking about a film called La Llorona. Not the American one.
Oh, thank you.
The Guatemalan film. It's got a lot of parallels to Tigers Are Not Afraid. There's this horrible genocide that occurred in Guatemala in the 80s that not a lot of people actually know about or talk about. And it left also a lot of orphaned kids. Interestingly, a lot of kids ended up getting taken in by some of the soldiers that killed their parents, and they didn't, they grew up not even knowing it, which is just a crazy thing. Yeah, I want to make a movie about that, but I'm probably not the right person to make it because it's not my story. But La Llorona is fantastic. It's a very slow burn movie, but it's a powerful film.
Yeah.
And so I'd love to see those directors, Guillermo del Toro, the filmmakers behind City of God. It's Fernando Meireles and Katia Lund. And then I don't know how to say his first. I think it's Jairo Bustamante is the director of La Llorona.
Yes.
It's J-A-Y-R-O. I don't know how that would.
Jay Bustamante.
Jairo?
Jairo Bustamante.
Yeah. Mr. Bustamante.
Señor Bustamante.
And Issa Lopez. I'd love to see them tackle an anthology together, like, you know, fusing kind of these different storylines and threads. Yeah. About like using kind of supernatural horror elements and like these children, forgotten children. So yeah, that was my more serious script doctoring.
I like it.
You know, you do bring up a really important point of like the Americanization of being everything. And there are so many things like, you know, from the dawn of freaking time that happen all around the world that we don't hear about here in America, unless you happen to be listening to like BBC or some other like news source. And it's unfortunate. But, like the whole story of La Llorona is just, I think it's fascinating. But that's why I'm afraid to see the American version.
Well, they're totally different. It's not even about the same subject matter because La Llorona is a classic, ghost tale that takes different form in different cultures, right? And the Guatemalan version is about, you know, using that folklore to talk about an important cultural issue, an historical issue, whereas the American one is exploiting a popular ghost myth.
American horror movies are all becoming very the same, and it's not even a form that makes sense to us now.
White people are crazy about curses. That's what the show said. That's pretty much what that movie proves.
Let's make an American remake of the American remake of The Grudge, you guys. Yeah.
God. Yeah.
Even the Japanese version wasn't that good. What are we even doing?
What are we even doing?
Hey, remember the American remake of Tigers You're Not Afraid, where she wishes that her dad, Ryan Philippe, was cool, and then suddenly he is, but then somebody else dies? Remember that?
Or they both hold the tiger at the same time, and they wish that they could trade places.
And then one of them's Dudley Moore all of a sudden.
Yeah. Are you saying this is going to turn into like Michael Jackson's Remember the Time video and someone's just going to transform from a person to a tiger? And okay.
Of course. Why not?
Or...
It sounds actually way too creative for an American remake. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, I found some footage. Then I went to the library. Oh, don't say his name 3 times. No, it's 5 times. Oh, sorry.
You know, all that said, I think Neil Breen would make a very classic attempt at this film. But, you know, we all dream.
That's one Kickstarter I would fund.
Did we learn anything through this?
Through the experience or the film? Because two things are not really the same.
I mean, either.
Respect your plushes. They are alive and they will show you where the room full of corpses is.
Yeah, you can find bravery in the littlest things. Yes. You are going to get attacked by your own plushy tiger. You have been shaking that thing like a British nanny.
Her name's Lisa, and she's used to it.
Is she Lisa Frank?
No, she's not. Say stuff like that.
Dance on the sand.
Rawr, she's going to come get you.
I would say that what I've learned is that, one, if you're hiding from somebody and they have the number of the cell phone that you're holding as leverage, maybe should either have it off or on silent. Also, if you just tricked somebody, somebody you know is a murderer, into believing that they destroyed said cell phone, turn said cell phone off or on silent, or at least, you know, go far, far, far away.
Like, and if they have Snapchat, turn off the GPS locator on Snapchat. Yeah.
Don't check in to the place.
This movie is all about cellular phones. I'm surprised Nicolas Cage wasn't in it.
Ragamuffin children that are running away from you just checked in too.
Oh man, that's my favorite Burger King too. I'll be right there.
Not like that other bathroom.
Yes. Oh, you know what happens in those places.
Also, don't always trust the police. When you've especially when you have a video of some politician killing a chick.
You call maybe. The media, they will put that shit on
blast. Yeah.
What are you talking about? That video's out of context. That was locker room talk.
You post it to your OnlyFans or
maybe not
Instagram.
Getting the wrong message there.
I don't want them to have an OnlyFans, Linda. You're gonna get us canceled and put on a list, and we don't want to be on a list. Please, Linda.
Why isn't one of
Linda's
us
reflections
are
right now? Opinions are not those of Videorama.
For once, I'm not the offensive one. This is good. I like it.
Did anybody else learn anything?
Anything witty to comment on learning. I guess, other than, like, on a serious note, like, I really hadn't thought about, like, I knew about all the messed up stuff going on with the drug cartels in Mexico and other parts of Latin America, course, but I hadn't really given thought to the idea of how many children are on the street and orphaned as a result specifically. So that's just not a perspective I had before. So the film did kind of open my eyes to that.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree, because I'd never thought about it either. And then, like, watching this movie, it's like, fuck yeah. I mean, there's got to be, I mean, I don't know. I think
are backed by Canadian banks.
We take a lot of things that are, you know, we take a lot of things for granted. Like, well, wouldn't there be some sort of system in place that would take these kids in? Wouldn't this? Wouldn't that? Why wouldn't they just go to a cop or, you know, blah blah blah? And this kind of yeah. I mean, they have no options pretty much. But yeah, so then I guess with that, I would say please, please, please listen, follow, rate, and review Videorama, especially on Apple Podcasts. It will earn you an on-air shout-out. And check out our stuff on YouTube, where you can see our beautiful face. Also, you can see my awesome outfit for today. Also, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/VideoramaPod. Remember, you can find Videorama on Twitter and maybe on Instagram and Facebook at VideoramaP.
Wherever fine podcasts are sold.
Yes. It's VideoRama, the letter P. You can visit our website whenever I get that going at VideoramaPod.com. And you can write to us at any time at VideoramaPod@gmail.com, you motherfuckers.
I don't have one to grab.
Oh, here, I've got Lava Fauna. And,
I'm
not afraid of nothing, never.
Oh, if you visit our Twitter account at Videorama P, you can take. Is that Danielson?
Yes.
Yes.
Even in a miniature form, you're okay.
You ain't moving no train.
Oh, God.
If you go to our Twitter account at VideoRobOP, you can take part in our poll to vote on who presented the best movie in this theme this month. And you get to decide who will be Employee of the Month.
And what choices do we choose this month? We have Near Dark.
Oh, yes. First episode, Near Dark. My episode was The Babadook.
Babadook.
Adrian covered. Adrian.
Ida Lupino is The Hitchhiker from 1953.
Yes.
And obviously, this episode is Becky's choice. God, this sounds like Sophie's choice.
Well, it's going to be a really hard decision to choose the best because these are all great movies. So,
Tigers, you're not afraid.
To be a Sophie's choice.
And the other movies are going off on a train to. Oh God, let us stop, 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 stop.
No. That's all, Linda.
What can you do? You can check out my other podcast about witches in history and stories of all media, Bedknobs and Broomflicks. Also, check me out as Lila in Dispatches of Disassociation and as Patrice and Lieutenant Murphy in Coyote's Bluff.
I was in that, too.
Yes, he was. Adrian, what you got going on? Where can they find you?
Oh, I'm on DeviantArt.com with my 3,000 plus artworks and stories under Leo the Fox, L-E-O-T-H-E-F-O-X, all run together, all one word. And I'm on the YouTube as A.A. Smith. I recently posted video of an abandoned brewery somewhere. And I'm on Goodreads as Leo the Fox, and you can find me on there complaining about books that are 100 years older than you have and you haven't read.
My God.
And Donnie, how about you?
I can't say it now because Cage's Kiss is over with, so never mind Pornhub. But I am will always be the boy who blew, damn it. But I am Unreal Goals on Twitter. I am Stilgar the Twi'lek on Instagram and Unreal Goals, yes. I am Unreal Goals on Yahoo and YouTube, especially YouTube, where I'm going to be posting hopefully soon a sampling of our horror anthology. And I've just got to make up some more music for that. But yeah, other than that, you can find me at your local Arby's digging through the trash like the trash panda I am.
And giving happy endings.
And one of our new customer, Becky Sayers, where can she be found?
Under a bridge, looking sad.
Downtown.
Twitter is probably the best place to find me, at Becky M. Sayers. You can check out The Last Buck Hunt on Amazon Prime. And, yeah, that's pretty much all I promote. And I did want to do a small note. There's a lot of serious shit going on in the world right now, as always. But in particular, there's a lot of anti-Semitic stuff right now. So I did want to call out that no way associated with that. And the jokes were no way associated with that. Couldn't let that go without saying it. So, yeah. Sorry to end on a really down note.
No, no. Kudos.
We can get serious. It's cool. Yeah.
Totally okay. Yeah. Usually they just give me shit for being serious. So you're okay.
Pretentious. Not serious. Pretentious.
I don't know what you're talking about, Don.
Very thin line.
Look here.
A very thin line between siblings and coworkers.
And murderers. So, I guess this would be also a great time to remind you all that if you go to our Patreon at patreon.com/VideoRamaPod, you can, depending on how much you want to help us, you can choose one of the themes that we cover. You could be a guest on here, or you could choose a movie that we cover as well. Otherwise, you will be getting some awesome, I know we're going to have stickers and buttons And maybe we'll get some notifications or ringtones for you. I don't know. We'll see. Excellent. So you heard the man. And next week is a new month, so we'll be moving on to a new theme. And I guess then we'll have to roll the dice and see what it will be.
Yep, by then we'll have gotten Mrs. Ellis and her answer.
Oh, God, that old lady's still on hold.
She's still alive. I mean, has anybody checked on her?
Costing her a fortune.
I mean, they can't play Jeopardy forever.
On that note, I will say bye!
Bye!